This is Don Hassig with Cancer Action Network's Loving the Earth Environmental Revolution. Joining us today is a very important guest. This is Dr. Vincent, Integrated Risk Information System. Good afternoon, Dr. Caliano.
Good afternoon, Don.
Thank you so much for, you know, being willing to share your expert knowledge with us. Quantitative risk assessment is a very interesting area for me and our organization. It is being used because of the existence of chemicals, including the POPs, the persistent organic pollutants. It's being utilized because of the presence of these chemicals in our environment, to the extent that the general public is exposed to these chemicals and has body burdens, and people are trying to figure out whether the exposure and the resultant body burden is causing harm or is likely to cause harm. So quantitative risk assessments are done for chemicals and groups of chemicals so as to be able to take action if the action is merited by the results of the quantitative risk assessment. Let's tell us about any, you know, your prior employment and your history before you came to hold this important position with US EPA.
Well, actually, I've had more than 20 years of experience in the field of qualitative and quantitative risk assessment. The first nearly 20 years of those were at EPA in this very office, though not as director of the IRIS program. I worked on initially quantitative risk assessments of carcinogens, and then later qualitative and quantitative risk assessments of various compounds. Then in 2003, I was fortunate enough to be selected to go to the World Health Organization, to their International Agency for Research on Cancer, and to run a program called the IARC Monographs, which are a series of qualitative risk assessments that identify cancer hazards that humans might be exposed to. Then in the middle of last year, go ahead.
Yeah, that's great background on where you are coming from. Can you give us a little background on the US EPA IRIS?
IRIS is EPA's Integrated Risk Information System. It provides qualitative and quantitative risk assessments of cancer and health effects other than cancer caused by chemicals in the environment. To date, more than 500 chemicals currently have some assessment on the IRIS system, and there are many more assessments under development right now.
Okay.
These assessments, okay.
Yeah, which of the POPs and which of the persistent organic pollutants referred to as POPs are covered by the Integrated Risk Information System?
Well, we have several chemicals. There's also several definitions of how persistent something needs to be. But we have assessments of polychlorinated biphenyls. We have assessments of hexachlorobenzene, hexachlorocyclohexane. We have a few pesticides that are persistent organic pollutants. Chlordane, Myrix, toxaphene, DDT would be some examples of those.
Okay. Now tell me, are these qualitative risk assessments or quantitative risk assessments?
In general, they're both. There's always a qualitative risk assessment if the chemical's on IRIS, and if the data are sufficiently precise as to the quantitative effects that we see in either humans or in animals, there will be a quantitative risk assessment as well.
Okay. So let's go to another level of specificity. Is there a quantitative risk assessment for dioxins?
No, there isn't one yet. There is an assessment that is under development. It's been peer-reviewed by external peer reviewers, and we're looking to complete that assessment, get a final interagency review, and put that up on IRIS.
So would that quantitative risk assessment for dioxins, would that come to fruition, be completed and provided on the IRIS without any connection to the finalization of the draft USEPA dioxin reassessment?
The dioxin reassessment is the basis of what would be on IRIS. IRIS has a short summary that will be maybe on the order of 20 pages for something like dioxin of all the information in a document that's probably about 2,000 pages overall.
Yep.
But both the 2,000-page document and the shorter summary are considered what we put on IRIS.
Yep. But what I'm getting at is, does the IRIS dioxin risk assessment, quantitative risk assessment, have to wait until the US EPA dioxin reassessment is complete?
It's final? The same thing. The IRIS assessment is the US EPA dioxin.
Okay. Okay. So we're not going to see any IRIS assessment, risk, quantitative risk assessment for dioxins, until we see the final draft of the dioxin reassessment.
That's right. They're the same thing. It'll be
okay.
You'll see
okay.
It first on IRIS.
Okay. Okay. So there's no quantitative cancer risk assessment yet for dioxins. What about PCBs?
PCBs, there is a quantitative risk assessment. It looked at the epidemiological studies that are mostly of workers who were exposed to PCBs on the job, generally in the manufacture of electrical equipment. And it also looked at extensive studies in experimental animals where PCBs were fed to rats or mice in varying doses.
Okay.
We did compute cancer risk assessment numbers for exposure to dioxins, to PCBs from food and also through inhalation or exposure through drinking water.
Okay. Is there a quantitative cancer risk assessment for the hexachlorobenzene?
Hexachlorobenzene, I don't know if there's a quantitative risk assessment on that. With over 500 chemicals, I can't have them all in my mind, but I can check that.
Yep. Well, what about the brominated flame retardants, such as the polybrominated biphenyl? PBDE, polybrominated diphenyl ether, the PBDEs.
Only for the decachlorinated diphenyl ether is there an assessment up on IRIS now.
Is it a quantitative cancer risk assessment?
Yes, I believe it is.
Quantitative. Okay. What about the hexachlorocyclohexane?
That's another one. I know there is a cancer risk assessment. I don't know if it's quantitative, but I can check that.
Okay. Well, some of the other chemicals that I would really like to know if there is a quantitative cancer risk assessment in existence for them on the IRIS. The others that I'm interested in are chlordane and Myrex and toxaphene and the DDT, that old pesticide that's still around as the DDE, in a lot of cases. But I can wait on figuring that out. It is a lot of information, and I've been talking to people in the European Food Safety Authority, and they do quantitative risk assessments. And on their website, they only have, I think they have about five, there certainly are not 10 quantitative risk assessments for pop chemicals that are considered to be POPs by, the general people that are in discussion on what a POPs is, what a persistent organic pollutant actually means and what it is. They have about between 5 and 10 quantitative risk assessments on their website. Another question that I have for you, is the quantity of cancer risk imposed by background exposure to any of the POPs that are addressed by the IRIS, for which the quantitative cancer risk assessments exist, is it greater than acceptable?
Well, acceptable is a term that it's not really scientific. It depends on the available statutes and the regulatory agencies that set those standards. What we try to do with IRIS is to just array the scientific information so that regulators or other people can make the judgment about whether the risks are acceptable or not.
Okay. Well, say if the standard was 1 in a million cancers, would the cancer risk imposed by the PCBs, you said there was a quantitative cancer risk assessment for the PCBs, would the cancer risk imposed upon the average consumer of animal fat in the U.S. or anyplace else on Earth, because it's fairly ubiquitous, the levels and the contamination levels in places other than places where there's been, you know, very extreme dioxin contamination or PCB going contamination going on, would the quantity of risk set forth in the IRS for PCBs be such that it was greater than 1 in 1 million?
The complexity of your question shows why that's a difficult question to answer. When you talk about an average person in the U.S. or any person anywhere else in the world, it really depends on where they live and their habits and what they eat.
Average
over the whole world, probably not. But if somebody consumes fish that's from a PCB-contaminated area, in violation of the fish advisories that are posted, yes, they might very well or probably
do. That wasn't my question. Yeah, my question is on background levels of exposure. You know, say for the average consumer of animal fat in the U.S., your risk assessment for PCBs, if it's anything like the risk assessment that's being put together, you know, that's in draft for dioxin, you know, the U.S. EPA dioxin reassessment, the quantitative cancer risk assessment that's contained therein, you know, that's being produced in that document, that Chapter 3, it describes the amount of background exposure that's supposed to exist, you know, it's estimated to exist, and it has a cancer slope factor, and there is, you know, it's possible to conclude how much cancer risk will be imposed by average consumption. It's about 1 in 1,000, according to the 2003 draft of the dioxin reassessment. So what is the, you know, how much is it? What is the, you know, what is the cancer risk imposed by background levels exposure for PCBs, according to IRIS?
IRIS doesn't do that because IRIS doesn't have the exposure estimates. I think that
the
difference between dioxin and PCBs is PCB exposure is often much more localized to living near a contaminated waterway. And
yeah, heavy exposure, but background exposure that you get PCBs from just the background levels in the overall environment. And there are certainly PCBs. We tested the milk up here for PCBs a long time ago, and they were David Carpenter's lab down at SUNY Albany did the analysis, and there were PCBs comparable to those in Belgium in the milk from an organic dairy farm that I, you know, picked up a sample of the milk from and put it through the analytical, you know, process. So, you know, there certainly is PCB exposure going on for the average consumer of animal fat anywhere on Earth, and I was just wondering if, you know, what the IRS said about that. That's fine. That question wasn't in your question, so it's perfectly understandable that, you know, we wouldn't get a final answer on it. At the current state of the knowledge, and this question was, you know, upfront, ahead of time, at the current state of scientific knowledge, is it possible to produce a quantitative cancer risk assessment for the total POPs exposure imposed by consumption of all animal fat?
I think that would be very difficult with the information we have right now. One reason it's difficult is we don't have quantitative risk assessments for all of the POPs.
Right.
Another is just the idea of getting what is the average level of exposure someplace. Now, maybe if you go to a particular locality, you can sample how much is in beef fat, how much is in pork fat, how much is in chicken fat, how much is in fish. But people's consumption patterns are also different.
Yep.
And the way you prepare the fish could increase or decrease the levels. So these things are very difficult. Plus, many of these organic compounds have interactions that can sometimes magnify the risk or attenuate the risk. And so even if you know all the individual compounds, the exposure from the mixture is of all the POPs from all the different sources, there is additional complexity. So I think it would be very difficult to do that. And that's why most of our standards really are set, you know, compound by compound right now.
Right. Is it possible to produce a cancer protective food safety standard for total POPs exposure resulting from consumption of all animal fats?
Well, I think that would probably still need to wait till we have quantitative risk assessments on more of the POPs. I think we certainly can produce risk assessments and standards for how much PCB intake,
Okay.
if our, yeah, and some individual chemicals, and then you still have to apportion how much is coming from animal fat and how much is coming from other sources.
Okay. There's one more question here, and then I will just kind of like just to go a little bit, into some thinking about what's misstated and what the public should be thinking when we're thinking about what's misstated. So this final kind of clearly set forth question, considering the multiple exposures to POPs that are resultant from animal fat consumption, how should cancer risk assessment information for individual chemicals or groups of chemicals that exist at this time, that are in existence and on the IRIS or on the, the European Food Safety Authority's website or wherever these are being used and set before the public, how should those cancer risk assessments for individual compounds or, small subsets of the POPs, such as the dioxin subset, which is not small, but it's, not certainly not all POPs. So whether it's a group of chemicals that the quantitative risk assessment exists for, or it's, individual chemical like hexachlorobenzene or the hexachlorocyclohexane, how should the public look at these risk assessments that are for just one chemical when they sit down and eat, a hamburger or they eat a piece of fish or whatever, and that animal fat contains many of the POPs, as we've just been, stating. What does it mean? How, what I'm getting at is, how can that standard be relevant to the protection of their health when they're eating something that has a whole bunch of other chemicals that there aren't any standards for?
Well, that is one of the challenges of setting standards because people are not exposed to just one chemical at a time. So the hamburger might contain a negligible amount of one of these POPs. But yeah, you'd want to add up all of the different chemicals that the person eats, not just in this hamburger, but in the other things that the other foods that the person eats during the day and the other exposures they might have. I think we try to express this on IRIS by the risk per, milligram per day of exposure to some of these chemicals. So then you can say if somebody eats two hamburgers and those hamburgers are contaminated a particular number of parts per billion, you can do the arithmetic and figure out how many milligrams per day they're getting, and then you can figure the risk from that chemical, and then you can add that up across all the different foods and all the different chemicals. I mean,
It'd be
it's
very
a complex.
daunting. Nobody's ever going to
Well,
do that.
EPA does do that, and
Well, it does do it. That's exactly what it does. But I'm saying the member of the public that's looking at this information, they're not going to do that. They wouldn't do it even if they could do it. I doubt they could do it. And even if they did do it, what would it mean in the end when we don't have the quantitative cancer risk assessment information for so many of the chemicals? And when you said a negligible quantity of one of the POPs, it's more like a certain quantity of many of the POPs that you would be getting out of your hamburger, or two, or three, or four, or however many people consume. And so it truly does, and in the way my expert knowledge in cancer risk, especially chemical carcinogenesis, is that at the very least, or at least as is oftentimes the case, at the very least, the quantitative cancer risk for one chemical that's in a mix that you're, having an exposure to, that you're consuming or having some kind of intake, it's additive at the very least. If not, there's synergisms involved that would cause, say, in the case of, say, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons and arsenic, there's a multiplicative effect of the multiple exposure so that the risk is much greater for getting exposed to PAHs and arsenic as compared to just the PAHs at one time and the arsenic at another time and not having those both those chemicals in your body at the same time. So what I'm getting at, considering all this lack of information, and the presence of these chemicals in the food supply and in our bodies, and in the bodies of our mothers and their mothers for a considerable number of generations now, wouldn't it also be important to just let the public know how far we are from really being able to say anything significant based upon the existing science when it comes to how safe it is to eat animal fat?
I think that scientists do a good job of limiting, telling people the limits of their knowledge. I think what I would like to do at IRIS is to increase the amount of knowledge that is available by putting more chemicals on IRIS, by putting more quantitative risk assessments on IRIS, so that for the small fraction of chemicals that we really do have these assessments, we can make that a larger fraction, and in that way get a better handle on the total risks that people might
be. I think that's very important. But in the meantime, when the exposure has been going on for so long and the cancer rates are so high and some of these other diseases like cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes, which are also associated with POPs exposure, just as cancer outcomes associated with POPs exposure, wouldn't it be valuable to tell the people just that these chemicals are present and they are in their bodies and they've been there over the generations, so that there was gestational exposure on top of the exposure they get in their own lifetime, and tell them that we don't have the full scientific picture of these chemicals and that it will be wise to limit intake?
I think we tell people as much as we know about what levels are found in the body.
But they're not being told to limit intake. They're not being told that there's a limited knowledge, so you should limit intake since we don't know what this is doing to you. They're not being told that. There's not a single, I don't think there's a government health entity on earth that's doing that right now. The UNEP is getting there. They've got this, the UNEP Safe Planet Campaign has a body burden flagship, and they're working on a food flagship. It'll be very interesting to see what the food flagship shapes up into being. Environmental groups are telling people this, you know. And we'd like to see government just telling people, you know, the names of the chemicals, where they're at in the environment, how little is really known about them, how much cancer exists, the connections that are known about the exposures and cancer outcome, and then let people make their own mind based on the lack of scientific knowledge. And see, that is not what is transpiring when it comes to how government is approaching this, you know?
Well, EPA does some things like that with its fish advisories. They do say based on
Fish advisories. I agree. They do it with fish advisories. They're great about fish advisories. The New York State Department of Health, as awful as they are, do a top-notch job on fish advisories. I'm talking about the commercial food supply, the food that people put on their table every day and get so much more exposure to than the wild-caught fish. You know, people don't do all that much wild-caught fishing. That are people that are, you know, got their head on their shoulders and haven't had their head in some places where you wouldn't want to put your head, because this is so obvious to them. You know, this thing of, you know, the poisoned rivers and the poisoned fish. You know, I quit eating fish out of the St. Lawrence River a long, long time ago, and it was before there were any of those fish advisories, or at least I never saw them before I quit eating it, you know. And see, what I'm talking about is having the public know about the POPs and the hamburger and the chicken and the eggs and the ice cream and the cheese and, you know, all that food that is so much more readily available, and that people are suspecting, you know, they think this is food that people are really, like, connected to. The government, they're responsible for this. They wouldn't let us consume this. If the government told us about POPs and wild-caught fish, surely they'd have the common sense enough and be reasonable enough to tell us about the POPs in the hamburger. So they just kind of feel like, well, they didn't tell us about it. There must not be any in there, or at least it must be such a small quantity that they know it's not going to cause us harm, and that is not the case. You don't know it's not going to cause them harm. You just said you didn't know.
A lot of these things we don't know, but that's why we're trying to expand IRIS to include more chemicals, get more information out there.
Very important.
Other agencies are the ones responsible for monitoring the levels in various foods, and the more information we could put out to them, the better the job that they can do.
I love that, Bill. John, we're out of time here, John. We're at 4:32.
That's right. I appreciate it very much, Dr. Caliano. You're a good man.
Thank you very much. You too. Good luck to you.
Thank you very
much. Thanks very much, Vince. Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
This is Don Hasig with Cancer Action Network. You have been listening to Loving the Earth, Environmental Revolution. Dr. Vincent Caliano with the US EPA Integrated Risk Information System has just been speaking to me and the listeners, and it's very clear that we need an environmental revolution. Good day.